Thank you to the ensemble. Thank you, David Beatty, for playing us on the piano. Let me start our stopwatch here so that I'm on time. Today we're going to explore the book of Esther. The name Esther itself means something is hidden. Something hidden. And we're going to learn today that God works in hidden ways. Not always apparent to the human eye. Not apparent to the five carnal senses. And it was true then, and it's true now. My goal for today is to review a little bit about the narrative of the book of Esther. We'll explore some of the culture surrounding a celebration called Purim. It's a holiday. It's mentioned in the scriptures. It's kept by the Jews to this present day in the celebration of Esther and the deliverance of the Jewish people. We're also going to answer a fascinating mystery that surrounds the book of Esther. For you see, in the book of Esther, the name God is not found written in the text, or at least the way that we see it, the apparent view of it, to the uninformed spectator, if you will. We'll discover that something's hidden. Something's hidden here in the scripture, and something even about ourselves perhaps is hidden in our own lives. Now, I have an attorney. I've known him for about 30 years since he was a child. His father was my attorney, and the son has now progressed to be take over the practice. His name is Matthew Judah Shahan. It's a really good Jewish name. He's on the board of his local synagogue, and he's a longtime client of mine. I've done business with him as well, and I really enjoy Matt. And Matt, in a typical Jewish fashion, loves argument, and I love argument too, and we're good friends. And we usually argue my two favorite topics. One is baseball, because Matt is a big baseball fan. And the other one is religion. He knows his scriptures very, very well. And he's, of course, a skeptic of Christianity, and he brings out things, and we debate and so forth. And I will concede that Matt argues very well, not only in a courtroom, but he also argues very well about religion. But I have a touche. I have a religious touche that's when he gets one on me, and he does on occasion stump me, and he argues well, I have the touche, and that is this. Why is it, though, that only Sandy Koufax and Hank Greenberg are the only Jewish people in the Hall of Fame? And he has not a good retort on that. And I win that argument. But anyway, Matt shared with me some of the customs of his synagogue. He's on the board of the synagogue. And I thought we might do a little bit of this today. It sounds like a neat celebration, some of the things that surround the celebration of Purim. It's timely for this season, here in the days of unleavened bread and the Passover. And I'll tell you why. It's, although Purim was back in early March this year, it actually relates to the Passover. And let's go over to Esther 3 and verse 11. Esther 3 and verse 11. Just to kick this out, and you might want to mark Esther because we'll be there quite a bit. Esther 3 verse 11 says, "The king said to Haman," Haman is the villain of the story. Every good story has, of course, the good guy and the bad guy. Haman's the bad guy. "The silver is yours, and the people also. Do with them as you please." And then the king's scribes were summoned on the 13th day of the first month. Now, let's just stop there for a second, because it's real easy to skim over that. What day is the 13th day of the first month in the Hebrew calendar? That is the day before Passover. Now here's Haman plotting to kill the Jews. And what does he get for this, by the way? Silver. Now, if we jump this forward to the New Testament, what do we see? We have Judas on what day? The 13th day of the first month, he was going around to the carnal authorities to plot against Jesus Christ. And his reward was what? Silver. And may I suggest there is a connection between Haman and his attempt to destroy the Jews, and Judas, whose attempt through Satan was to kill the king of the Jews. There is a connection that is there. And it goes on to say, it was written just as Haman commanded to the king's satraps, to the governors who were over each province, and to the princes of each people, each province according to its script, each people according to its language, written in the name of King Xerxes, and sealed with the king's signet ring, right there, with his authority, to do what? To destroy and to kill and annihilate all the Jews, both young and old, women and children. Now, in a synagogue on Purim, they have some customs that Matt told me about. Sounds kind of neat. The little girls dress up like Esther. And Queen Esther, of course, was in fine attire and so forth. And the little girls dress up when they go to the synagogue on Purim. And the adults do a few things. One of the things they do as a custom is they write Haman on the bottom of their shoes. So I thought I would do that today. And I'll show you. Haman on the bottom of my shoe. So what you're doing is on Purim, you're walking around on Haman. Now, I don't know what it is in Middle Eastern culture, but the bottom of the shoe is a bad place. I realize it's a dirty place, but especially in Middle Eastern culture. I remember when Saddam Hussein was brought down from power back in 2003. I was watching it, and our American troops came along with some Iraqi troops that were in consort with us, and they tore down this huge statue of Saddam Hussein. And as they were dragging it through the street, people were taking off their shoe, and they were hitting it in the face and hitting it in the body and all of that. That's the ultimate way to despise someone, is to put the bottom of the shoe there on there. And so in the synagogue, you write the name Haman on the bottom of your shoe. And in that regards, I did that today. The bottom shoe, bad place. This is if you're taking notes. Bottom shoe, bad place. Put that down. Today I also bought a grogger. This is a grogger. A little noisemaker. And that is part of the tradition as well. I gave a few of you out here in the audience some groggers to participate. We'll have a little bit of an interactive sermon here. Whenever the name Haman is said in the congregation, the people will use a grogger. And if you don't have a grogger, what they do is the men boo and the women hiss. They go, shh. So let me hear your hisses. All right, very good. How many hear a boo? Boo. All right, let's do a grogger. All right. So now we'll only try this once, all right, because I will mention Haman's name several times, and I don't want it to be distracting. But I at least wanted to try it once, that as we read a scripture, that we do the boo or the hiss or a grogger or whatever is appropriate when it regards to Haman, because I just thought it would be fun. All right, so let's go. Esther 8, verse 7. Then King Xerxes said to Esther, the queen, and unto Mordecai the Jew, behold, I have given Esther the house of Haman. That was wimpy, guys. One more try. Haman! All right. I like that. This is the bad guy. He's trying to kill our guys. Come on. I've heard more from you guys at the baseball game. I really have. Because they hung him upon the gallows because he laid his hand upon the Jews. Now, last month, in March, I don't know if this was by coincidence or by design, but I do feel that God's hand was involved with this. We had Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu come to our United States Congress to address a profound issue of our time, of Iran with nuclear weapons potential. And I thought I would quote a little bit from this. When he spoke, you realize it was on the eve of Purim. The eve of Purim. Benjamin Netanyahu is concerned about the annihilation of the Jews, as I believe he should be, at this very precarious time in history. And he spoke to our United States Congress. Before he came, this man went and he prayed at the Western Wall, petitioning God for guidance on his very important visit to the United States. I would like to quote a little bit from his speech, if you may. For I do believe the timing and the speech itself was God-inspired. May I suggest that, at least. By the way, Benjamin Netanyahu. Netanyahu's name, it's a rare name. It means gift from God. It's a profound thing. And his resume is very impressive. This is a man's man. Very impressive. In 1967, he fought with the special forces. during the Six-Day War and was one of the ones that helped to liberate the Temple Mount as an 18-year-old. Israel overcame tremendous odds in the Six-Day War in 1967 to win the day. He has been wounded multiple times in battle. He was shot in the shoulder during the rescue of Sabina Flight 571 when it was hijacked and they took it to Ben Gurion Airport. And it was during what was supposed to be a refueling that Netanyahu and the special forces took the plane without any of the hostages being killed. But he was shot into the shoulder. He is known to be a warrior. And I say, when a man of those types of credentials speak, I listen. And a man who loves his people and loves his country. And Judah and Israel do have a special place now and in the future. So it pays for us to take note. And when a man of those credentials speak, it is wisdom that we listen. So let me quote part of the Purim speech from Benjamin Netanyahu. Thank you, America. Thank you for everything you have done for Israel. My friends, I come here today as Prime Minister of Israel. I feel a profound obligation to speak to you about an issue that could very well threaten the survival of my country and the future of my people. That is Iran's quest for nuclear weapons. We're an ancient people. In our nearly 4,000 years of history, many have tried repeatedly to destroy the Jewish people. Tomorrow night, on the holiday of Purim, we'll read the book of Esther. We'll read of a powerful Persian viceroy named Haman. We'll hold off on that because I will say the name several more times. And we don't want, this is serious. This is a serious speech. Haman plotted to destroy the Jewish people some 2,500 years ago. But a courageous Jewish woman, Queen Esther, exposed the plot and gave for the Jewish people the right to defend themselves against their enemies. The plot was foiled. Our people were saved. Today, the Jewish people face another attempt by yet another Persian potentate to destroy us. Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Khomeini, spews the oldest hatred of anti-Semitism, and with new technology, meaning nuclear weapons, of course. He tweets that Israel must be annihilated. Yes, he tweets. You know, in Iran, it's not exactly a free internet, but he tweets in English that Israel must be destroyed. Facing me right up here in the gallery and at the Capitol building, may I interject? There are 12 depictions of Moses with the Ten Commandments. Even in our Supreme Court, there is a depiction of the Ten Commandments. And let no one ever say that this great nation was not founded on biblical principles and without a knowledge of the Bible and its foundations. We're moving away from that in our country, unfortunately, but it's still there to this day. And as Benjamin Netanyahu looked up, he saw Moses, the image of Moses, and he said this: Moses led our people from slavery to the gates of the promised land. And before the people of Israel entered the land of Israel, Moses gave us a message that steeled our resolve for thousands of years. And I leave you with that message today. And he said it in Hebrew. I will read it to you in English. Be strong and resolute. Neither fear nor dread them in regards to the people dwelling in the land of Canaan. My friends, may Israel and America always stand together, strong and resolute. May we neither fear nor dread the challenges that are ahead. May we face the future with confidence, strength, and hope. May God bless the state of Israel, and may God bless the United States of America. I feel, brethren, that this speech will go down in history as one of the most profound, important speeches of our era. That's why I brought it to you today. For certainly, it is only a matter of time before Iran has a nuclear weapon. It is only a matter of time. 5 years, 2 years, 10 years, 30 years. But it will be a dangerous time when it happens. There's no way around that. There's no arguing that. Because once Iran has a nuclear weapon, Saudi Arabia, who is not friendly with Iran, they will have to have a nuclear weapon. And if Saudi Arabia has a nuclear weapon, Egypt will have to have a nuclear weapon. And so will Syria. Israel itself has 200 nuclear weapons at least right now. Brethren, a volatile area, people driven by strong religious feelings, with everyone drawn, if you will, at each other with nuclear weapons. We live in profound and very dangerous times. I don't like to think about it too much. But the events, to backtrack, the events of the book of Esther occurred around 483 BC, 480 BC thereabouts, during the first half of the reign of King Xerxes, who chose Esther to be his queen. And it was during this time that the remnants of the Jews had gone back from Babylonian captivity to try to establish the temple and all that, but a lot of Jews stayed behind. And these were the Jews that were up there that land there. Esther and Mordecai stayed behind. They lived in a city called Susa, which was the capital city of Persia, in which this story is set. I do find it amazing that for all the crosswinds of history that go back and forth and all of that, the Middle East is still the focal point of human history. It's not India. It's not Mongolia. It's not Siberia. It's not Alaska. It keeps boiling back down to the Middle East. It's rather amazing, a land that's mostly desolate, right? Iran has got good pistachios, and other than that, if it wasn't for oil, they wouldn't have the power that they do today. It's interesting how these things have come about in the modern times to work out the grand plan of God. Haman was the prime minister. He was well acquainted with political intrigue and power climbing. That was how he got about his power, was through political means. And the word Purim itself, the holiday that celebrates Easter, it means dice or lots, casting lots. And that is how it was determined on what month that it was that we're going to slaughter the Jews, is we will cast lots. And that is when we will kill the Jews. Now, why was it that Haman wanted to kill the Jews? Why was it? It was because Mordecai, who was Jewish, Esther was adopted by Mordecai, refused to bow down to him. And it means more than just bow down. There is a time when it is appropriate to acknowledge people that are in power and so forth and to give courtesy to them and so forth. That is proper. But what Haman demanded was reverence. And Mordecai would not revere another man before God. Brethren, if I can interject here, we are seeing now, right now, certain communities that are trying to demand that we bow to them, that we submit our Christian beliefs in order to provide certain services or whatever. This is only going to grow, and it will go into other areas as well. Why the book of Esther is important today is we are going to face these kinds of decisions really not too distant future, I believe. I see the clouds of the chariots out in the distance coming. Every one of us is going to have to face, are we going to revere man or are we going to revere God? Right even here in the United States of America, the land of freedom, it's coming. And it is happening to some Christians right now where they're having to put their faith on the line or lose their businesses or their professions because they refuse to bow to certain unreasonable requests. But as I said, orphaned as a child, she was brought up by her cousin Mordecai. Esther was selected by King Xerxes to replace Queen Vashti. And Haman, the prime minister, persuaded the king to issue a decree to kill all the Jews in the Persian Empire because, again, they refused to reverence him. Now, may I suggest, in the times that we live in, we must be very careful. We don't have to be militant. But as we face the challenges we face, we must have dignity as Queen Esther did, as Mordecai did. And we must always be, as it says in Matthew 10, verse 16, wise as serpents, gentle as doves. Pray for that wisdom. I feel we will need that. There will be the time that we need to take the stand and suffer. But we need to have the wisdom to not unnecessarily bring that into our lives as well. Pray always that we have wise as a dove, wise as a serpent, gentle as a dove. Now Esther and Mordecai were in good favor with the king. He wasn't quite aware of their Jewish background, which was kind of kept a secret from the king by Haman. But Esther, acting on Mordecai's advice, endangered her own life by appearing before the king. You know, you just didn't show up and say, "Hey, king, I'm your wife, I'm the queen. Hey, I got something, I want to go over the grocery list with you." That's not how it was done in those days. You had to be summoned and beckoned, and you just didn't make a request known. But seeing that Esther saw she was in the king's good graces, she invited both the king and Haman to a grand banquet. Now Haman, he thought, "Great, I'm being invited to the party." He thought this was going to be a great honor. And he thought he was going to be in Esther's good favor. But her real intention was to expose Haman's plot for the slimy guy that he was. It was during a second banquet that Queen Esther revealed her Jewishness to her Jewish origin to the king. And she pled for her life, for both herself and for all the people. Angry with Haman, the king says, "Let me think this over." And he walks out into the courtyard to ponder it. And as he's doing that, Haman, frantically realizing that the gig is up, goes to plead with Esther. He casts himself upon her while she's laying on a couch. And right then, I mean, this is great Hollywood. I love God's timing. Right then, the king walks back in the door and hears Haman on top of her. And King Xerxes says, you attempt to rape my wife? Right? Now, Haman had built some gallows for Mordecai. And the king orders that rather than Mordecai being on those gallows, it indeed will be Haman. And Haman is hung, potentially maybe even on a stake. But remember our other bad guy, Judas. He too was hung once his diabolical plot went backwards. So we see again another connection between the two. All right? So a great story of good versus evil in the crucible, facing impossible odds, and good triumphing. Always remember that in the end, when it looks really, really dark, there's always a good ending if you are believing in God. Now, we have a mystery, though. I'd like to address the mystery of the book of Esther. For in the book of Esther, we don't see the name God written, not apparently. Okay? Some people have thought, some of the liberal scholars have even gone as far to say that maybe Esther doesn't even belong in the canon. Maybe it's just a book of apocrypha, a little book, nice story, a nice history and all that, but maybe it really should not be canonized. All right? They say there's no reason for the book to be in the Bible, but I will argue against that greatly. For in the Bible, in Esther, there's a thing called acrostics. I gave everyone a handout, or most of you have a handout on this, and I wanted to show you that the name of God is indeed to be found in the book of Esther in lots of different ways. Now, my simple explanation for what an acrostic is sort of like Where's Waldo? You remember that book, Where's Waldo? You had to find the little guy hidden in there. And so in code, equal distant letters, there are acrostics of the name of God. And this is not found anywhere else in the Bible like this. Nowhere else in the Bible, unique to the book of Esther. I'll give you a couple of examples. If you look on your sheet here, the first acrostic, it comes from Esther 1, verse 20. If you look up there at the top, where it says number 4, realize going from right to left, the first letter of each word, YHVH, if you see that from 4, 3, 2 to 1 on the first acrostic. That's Yahweh. Yahweh in Esther 1, verse 20. In Esther 5, verse 4, here's one that reads from left to right. Yabo Hamalek Vehemen Vahayim, YHVH. The third acrostic from Esther 5, verse 13. Again, first letter of each word, YHVH, going from right to left. And a fourth time this is found as well in the book Esther 7, verse 7, YHVH. Yahweh is found four separate times there. Quite amazing to me. Quite amazing. And there's one other spot in Esther 1, verse 3. This is incredible. This one is truly incredible. It's not on a sheet here. But right off the bat in the book of Esther, if you go every eighth letter, every single eighth letter, you know what it spells out? It spells out Yahshua HaMashiach. I'm not good in Hebrew. Yahshua HaMashiach. Jesus is the Messiah. It is right there in the first verses of the book of Esther, every eighth letter. This is not found anywhere else in the Bible like this. It's incredible to me. I'm excited about this. It's cool. You know, I'm easy to convince with some proofs, right? I've had people ask me, you know, why do I believe? And Frankie Lane during the 1950s had a song called I Believe. And one of the words went like this. I don't sing, but it went like this. I believe above the storm, the smallest prayer will still be heard. I believe that somewhere in the great somewhere, He hears every word. Every time I hear a newborn baby cry, or touch a leaf, or see the sky, I know why I believe. I love nature, and I see God in nature. Is this His word? I know there's a creator. But is this His word? Let me tell you something. This is cool stuff. Yahshua the Messiah. Hundreds of years before there was a Jesus Christ on this earth, encoded into the scriptures in a book called Something's Hidden. And I refuse to believe that 40 different authors and 66 different books conspired together over 4,000 years to create a plot to deceive you and me. Thy word is truth. I'm impressed. I'm convinced. I know why I believe. So what's the takeaway that I want all of you to have today? I want you to realize that each of you too have something hidden. The power of God's Spirit resides in you. The power of God, the evidence of truth, the witness of these scriptures, the power of eternal life. It is in every single one of you that have repented and asked God to enter into your life through baptism and through the power of the Holy Spirit. But it's hidden from the world. It's hidden. We're viewed as foolish by the world. We're not remarkable. There's nothing special about Bill Lucenhide or any one of you. We're common out in the street. Jesus Himself was nothing exactly beautiful about Jesus. There was something hidden in Him too, perhaps. Right, of course. 1 Corinthians 1, verse 26. 1 Corinthians 1, verse 26. For consider your calling, brethren. There are not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble. No, not as far as the world views us. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to shame the wise, the supposed wise. And God has chosen the weak things to shame the things that are strong, and the base things of the world that are despised, that God has chosen the things that are not, so that He may nullify the things that are. Let's scroll over to Hebrews 11, verse 37. Hebrews 11, verse 37. This is speaking of the saints and some of the destiny, how those who had something hidden have been treated through the millennia who believed. Hebrews 11, verse 37. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were tempted. They were put to death. They were put to death with a sword. They went about in sheepskins, in goatskins. They were destitute, afflicted, ill-treated. They were men of the world, men of whom the world was not worthy. Wandering in deserts and mountains and caves and holes in the ground. And of all these, having gained approval through their faith. That is what is hidden. Their faith. But they did not yet receive what was promised. There's something hidden. It's not quite time for it yet to be exposed. We're still in the middle of the story, brethren. But do not look for validation from this world in anything. It is not a matter of money. It is not a matter of looks, clothes, cars. We live in a very materialistic society. That is how they gauge you, your titles, where you're at in the corporate world, whatever. All right? It is all foolishness. That is not what is hidden. That is what is apparent. Don't worry too much about that stuff. Worry about that which is hidden within you, the truth and the spirit and the love and the power of the Almighty that lives within you that is hidden. That is what is real. Do not look for acknowledgement from this world. They will not give it to you. But here's the trap. The trap is because we don't hear it from other people. That we don't believe it about ourselves. It's so easy to forget it. Because we're not getting the validation. And brethren, we are not going to get the validation. And that is why it's very important we're here with each other. So that we do validate each other as brothers. That know this rare thought and rare understanding of what is hidden. 1 Corinthians 2 verse 6. 1 Corinthians 2 verse 6. Yet we do not speak wisdom among those who are mature, a wisdom, however, that's not of this age, nor is it of the rulers of this age. Those are passing away. But we speak of God's wisdom as a mystery, the hidden wisdom which God predestined before the ages to our glory, the wisdom to which none of the rulers of this age have understood. For if they had understood, they would have not crucified the Lord of glory. We have other things that are hidden. We have gifts that have been given to this congregation. Of many different things, of service, of giving, of prayer, and so forth. You can read about those in 1 Corinthians 12. Those are hidden gifts, but God has given to us. All right, let them amongst us not stay hidden, though. We're working towards conclusion here. Friends, the world doesn't recognize us. We're like Gideon's little army, pared down to 300. But if you recall, they had a light inside of a clay pot that was hidden. And may I suggest that our bodies ourselves are that clay pot. And when the time came, when the trumpet call went out, the clay pot was broken and the light shined forth. That's going to happen to us someday. Our clay pot will be broken and our light will shine. We are Gideon's army. We are Gideon's army. Yet for a while, still hidden. As we move forward from these spring holy days, let's keep faith in the treasure that God has hidden into each and every single one of us. Let us stand tall in the face of persecution that's going to be coming. Let's stand tall during our trials that we have as individuals and as people as we live life. Let's remember to see ourselves and each other as God sees us. Made in the very image of God, precious in His eyes, His very children, with an unbelievable destiny in store. Let that not be hidden anymore in our hearts. Let our light shine. Keep the faith. Amen.